And were you, in fact, an operative? Were you dealing with classified information? Were you, so to speak, one of the higher-level security risks?
I would say so, yes, sir.
Why do you think... Now, you allege that during that period they called you to be part of a flight crew, as I recollect, but you didn't know exactly what was going to happen on that flight. Is that right?
I had no idea.
And why do you think they called you?
Because I've had prior experience in the very same matters with other people.
When you say the same matters, you're referring to covert activity?
That's correct.
In this case, of course, you're talking about someone who was not really an official of the government at that time. He was a candidate for the vice presidency, George Bush. You learned of his presence on that airplane. First of all, what kind of airplane was it?
The aircraft that departed the United States for Europe was a BAC-111.
Describe that airplane, if you would, and its ability to get over to Paris. Did you have to refuel and that sort of thing?
We refueled in Newfoundland. However, please be advised of one thing, that the aircraft was reconfigured in order to make longer stretches possible.
And so did you refuel on the ground or did you refuel in the air?
On the ground. The aircraft does not have air refueling capabilities.
How many were on the flight crew of that airplane?
Well, legal flight crew were three people.
And who were the other two?
Well, Richard Brennecke was one, I was one, and an Air Force major.
Do you recollect his name?
I don't dare bring his name up at this point in time.
Is he still an Air Force major?
He's not an Air Force major any longer, no, sir.
Can you go this far? Can you tell us why it would be inappropriate to bring up his name?
Yes, because he's worked for the Air Force in conjunction with State Department for quite some time. Unless he personally chooses to come forward, I do not dare mention it.
I see. Now, when during that flight did you learn that that George Bush, candidate Bush at that time, was on the airplane?
As I walked through the cabin to check out some equipment in the back of the aircraft.
And who else do you recollect was in the cabin?
Well, I recollect that Mr. Casey was in the aircraft and Mr. Donald Gregg.
And at that time, Donald Gregg was Mr. Bush's national security advisor, if you will?
Well, I think that would be overstated. I think that he was part of the campaign transition.
My point is that even though he didn't have a formal position in government, that my recollection is that Mr. Gregg was highly regarded by Mr. Bush.
Absolutely.
And that he was a very close confidant of Mr. Bush. Is that a fair statement?
Well, I think that would be a very fair statement.
All right. And
I'm not trying to be cagey. I'm just trying to qualify my answers as best as I can.
I understand that. Of course, there's an underlying question to all of this, and we're going to go through it point by point, but you're taking on, obviously, Captain, a very serious matter. Can you give people something to hang on to in terms of believing you? Can you give them some teeth in what you're saying?
I don't know if I can or not. See, that is probably the primary question that needs to be raised. I was merely a member of a flight crew transporting people from point A to point B, and then again an individual from point B back to point A, or point C to be more specific.
My
actual involvement was nominal, if any.
You were strictly there, in a sense, mechanically, to just get them there and back. You were not there in any policy capacity or any of that.
That is correct. I was merely the driver.
Yeah. Now, and then there were two others who were also merely the driver, right?
That is correct.
All right. So did you have any conversation with Mr. Bush on that airplane?
Very, very little. And whatever conversation that did occur was topical and bore no substance.
All right. Do you recollect Mr. Bush's demeanor on that flight? Did he seem tense? Did he seem apprehensive about anything?
Really, I couldn't comment on that because my trip through the cabin entailed approximately 45 to 50 seconds, and that was the extent of it.
Do you recollect how long this flight took to get to Paris?
The usual time. I think it took 6 or 7 hours.
And do you recollect when this flight took place?
Yes, it was the evening of the 19th.
The evening of the 19th?
Yes.
That's a key point, Captain, because I had on this program the other day Mr. Krovitz, who's the assistant editor for the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal, and he disagrees with Gary Sick on all of this, and he says that in Mr. Bush's itinerary, he and Mr. Justice Potter Stewart and Mrs. Stewart had lunch on the 19th. And then there was supposed to have been some other meeting at night. But it's conceivable then that if he had lunch with the Potter Stewarts, that he still could have left on the night of the 19th. Is that right?
I think it's conceivable, yes.
All right. What now? The flight took 6 or 7 hours over. How did you get the SR-71, which took about an hour and 14 minutes to fly back? In other words, why didn't they fly over in an airplane that would get over there as quickly as he could get back?
I can't comment on that. I'm not the one that made the travel arrangements, sir.
All right. So you were given no information about that?
None whatsoever. The particular type of work that I was involved in was very compartmentalized. I knew only that which I needed to know.
And you landed in Paris about 6 or 7 hours later, right?
That is correct.
All right. What happened upon landing in Paris?
There were several limousines parked below the aircraft. The passengers discharged. They went to the limousines and went from there to their destination.
And my understanding is you went to a hotel?
That is correct also.
All right. Before I take a break here, I want to bring in Harry Martin, who was publisher of the Napa Sentinel and formerly editor of the Defense Systems Review. Mr. Martin, is there anything you want to add at this point, up to the point in time that we have here? Anything that you might want to fill in with that I overlooked or amplify about what Captain Rusbacher has said?
Well, I think there's another passenger on a few other passengers on the plane.
Go right ahead.
And he has identified a woman on the plane and several, a few agents as well. And the woman would be Jennifer, was it Kurt? Can't remember her name off. Wait a minute, hold on a second. Jennifer Fitzpatrick.
Gentlemen, I never did make an identification of any woman on board that aircraft. I merely stated, yes, there was a lady on board.
All right. Now, Mr. Martin, how did you track down the name or identify her?
Well, basically, we checked where her whereabouts was as to with the president, and the president and her, or I'm sorry, he wasn't president then, but she and he were gone at that time, and we have, in other words, we don't have a positive identification, but people have indicated that, described the person, the woman on board, or the woman that was with the president, Mr. Bush. And the description certainly matches.
All right, so then you've done your own separate investigation of this.
We've done a lot of investigation because, you know, we can't just take Gunther's word for it. Not only that, we have to trace his background. And we're not the only organization working on this. We have formed a cooperative with a few other news media to, you know, check out different points in their regions so that we can get more verification.
So far, what Captain Rusbacher has said, do you confirm that from your... Have you independently confirmed?
No, we have not confirmed that he was the pilot per se. We have confirmed that the information and background information and everything that he has told us relative to this and other information from other individuals has checked out to be verifiable and therefore credible.
Have you been able to verify or confirm the flight itself?
No, we have not.
Okay. Let me take a short break. Captain, are you all right there at the payphone?
I'm all right, yes, sir.
You have some time there?
Pardon? I should have a few more minutes, yes.
All right, stay right where you are, and we'll keep you as long as you can stay. And Captain Rusbacher is with us. He's obviously, because he's a Terminal Island prison, federal prison, he's got to share the payphone with other prisoners, so we'll get right back to him at 6:18. The all-day traffic watch, Pamela Thomas. How we back we are. Mike Siegel with you. Captain Gunther Rusbacher is with us, the United States Navy, and he was working for the CIA, he tells us, during 1980 when the situation with George Bush developed, when he says he flew George Bush over to Paris and back, going over on a BAC-111. Captain, people have been telling me, who called the program, have been involved in the airfield, the aircraft field, that a BAC-111 is not likely to be able to make that flight. Can you comment about that?
The BAC was one aircraft that was reconfigured in order to make that flight.
So, in other words, the standard BAC-111 might have problems making that flight?
I wouldn't try it.
But they didn't.
To be honest with you.
They reconfigured it.
Precisely. And the aircraft was not a British aircraft under British jurisdiction. It was a third world country aircraft on loan to a different airline company.
Captain, was the whole flight crew working for the CIA at the time?
Yes.
Then what we have here is a private citizen absconding with a federal airplane and a federal crew.
No, sir, that is not correct. Mr. Siegel, the aircraft was not a federal aircraft.
The aircraft was a private aircraft?
It was a private aircraft that was on loan from from another government to a private leasing corporation.
I see.
But the plane on the way back was government-owned.
Was the SR-71 that you flew Mr. Bush back in government-owned?
Yes.
He was still a private citizen on the flight back.
That is correct.
So we and at the very least going over, there were people on the federal payroll of the CIA flying a private citizen running for the presidency to Paris when they were, in fact, working for the government. Did that seem strange to you, Captain?
Well, it sometimes yes, sometimes no. I've seen civilian employees from the United States government flying in SR-71s before.
Well, what I'm trying to say is he wasn't an employee of the government at the time.
No, but he was a contender for the vice presidential position.
Yeah, but he was a private citizen. And
that is correct, yes.
And so did it raise any... In other words, who gave the authority for you as a crew to fly him over there?
To fly him over there, there was no authority given from any government level.
So did you do this as private citizens?
We did it as personnel working for the agency. I don't know how you'd care to put it.
Well, but... Who would be the person who called you or the position who called you to say, go to this place at this time and fly this airplane?
Sir, I can't say that. All I can tell you is that I received a call from the center advising me to be in Washington, D.C. at a certain time.
I see. Okay. All right. So then you got a call from the CIA at the center, and they gave you the information. You went, and then you found this was the case that you were going to fly this airplane.
That is correct.
All right. So now you get over to Paris, and I gather you were there for about 3 hours. Is that right?
Approximately, yes.
And you went to a hotel with the flight crew?
Yes.
Did you have any idea where Mr. Bush went?
Well, you know, there's scuttlebutt within the vehicle of the flight crew, and we understood he was going to the George V and to the Crayon for meetings.
To those two hotels?
Yes.
And... you obviously had. Did you have any idea what the substance of those meetings was about?
Well, only the scuttlebutt that was being discussed within the crew vehicle and the information that I had leading up to it.
And what was that scuttlebutt?
Well, the scuttlebutt was that there were some high-level meetings to take place with regards to the release or the non-release of the American hostages.
All right. And
and the deal.
And the deal that we now know is being alleged by Gary Sick and others.
Well, yes.
Okay.
I might add also I hold Mr. Sick in high esteem, or professor as he now is.
I understand, yeah. There was allegedly, as you know, Captain, $40 million that was supposed to have changed hands. Do you know anything at all about that?
All I know, excuse me, I have a sinus condition. All I know is that the $40 million that allegedly, again, I would say allegedly, changed hands was a interim bank transfer between a United States bank or a United States banking facility to Luxembourg and then to Italy.
And do you know who that changed hands between?
Pardon?
Do you know who that would have changed hands between which parties?
I have some idea, but I'd rather not discuss it on the air.
Mike, you have a man in Tacoma Jail right now, or Pierce County Jail, Michael Reconocido, who apparently told the congressional investigators and I believe the San Francisco Chronicle that he helped facilitate the transfer of that money.
Yeah, we're going to try to get a hold of him at the Pierce County Jail. He's very close by here to talk to him about it. And but you're saying, Mr. Martin, that he, in fact, is alleging that he was involved in the transfer of those funds.
He was quoted in the San Francisco Chronicle a week ago Monday as stating that and apparently giving that to congressional investigators who are investigating the Justice Department at the present time.
We'll try to get a hold of him at the Pierce County Jail for a later program.
Well, please understand, until the gentleman does make a statement, I don't care to involve him in this issue.
I understand, Captain, and obviously we have to try to pursue this from various angles. It's Captain, I'm sure you can appreciate that if this did happen in the way you're suggesting, that there would probably be a very small paper trail because people knew they were doing things that would be potentially damaging and violations of law.
Well, not only is there a very small paper trail, but you're also talking about other installations that were involved, French government installations. And I doubt very seriously that any of us, and I'm speaking as a member of the public, would ever be able to gain access to any of those blasted records.
Well, that's the other part of this, of course, is that it would be difficult to reach. Well, all right, so now we
and
have...
Also, Mr. Siegel, if I may interject a point, the
sure.
aircraft in question, the BAC 111, has in the meantime returned to its original owner. The N number has been changed, and it has now been sanitized.
Do you have any idea who that owner is?
Yes, sir, I do.
Would you care to tell us?
Saudi government.
The BAC 111 is owned by the Saudi government.
Yes, sir.
This gets more involved all the time, doesn't it? As a matter of fact, we had, as we now know, during the Reagan years, the request from Mr. Reagan for the Saudis to participate in third government support for the Contras, don't we? I mean, that's separate from what you're talking about, Captain, but that was on the record at the time.
Yes, I understand.
All right. So let's go back to now to the flight back. You were at the hotel. Do they call you at the hotel to come back and take this flight back to the United States?
Yes, they did.
And when you got back to the, was it the same airport?
No. The aircraft took off from a French Air Force installation.
And you're talking about the trip back from France to the United States?
Pardon?
You're talking about the trip back home to the United States?
Yes.
What airport did you land at going over?
Pardon?
What airport did you land at going from the United States to Paris?
From the United States to Paris?
Yes.
Le Bourget.
And you came back from an Air Force installation on the way back?
That is correct.
And it was the SR-71?
That is also correct.
And to your knowledge, was this an American government-owned aircraft?
Well, sir, I don't know of any other government that owns a SR-71 or a YF-12A configuration.
All right, so this was then apparently a government-owned airplane. You fly Mr. Bush back, I think it took an hour and 14 minutes, is that right?
That's quite close, yes.
And where did you land?
We landed at McGuire.
And that's in New Jersey?
Yes.
And... did you have the feeling that this was all intended to be a very quick trip for the purpose of avoiding any question as to why Mr. Bush was not out there campaigning in the United States?
Mr. Siegel, I was not in a position to generate any feelings. My immediate concern was to get the aircraft in the air, retract the wheels in order not to break them off, and get the aircraft airborne into proper speeds and to await the proper tanking equipment. I had no chance whatsoever to ponder upon whatever reasons the powers to be might have chosen to take such routing back.
All right. On that note, we'll take a short break and come right back with Captain Gunther Rusbacher. It's 6:30, time for CNN News, and we come back at King News Talk 1090. It is 6:35 at King News Talk 1090. Mike Siegel back with you. Captain Gunther Rusbacher is with us, along with Harry Martin, who is a publisher of the Napa Sentinel and formerly editor of the Defense Systems Review. Captain Rusbacher is the pilot who has told us he flew George Bush to and from Paris during October 19th. And Captain Rusbacher, I guess you flew back, was it on October 20th in the early morning hours?
Yes.
Was it about 2 o'clock in the morning Paris time?
That is correct.
All right, and you flew back here and got George Bush back to New Jersey. During that 1 hour and 14-minute flight back to the United States, was there any conversation that you had with Mr. Bush?
Well, there were a few words exchanged. However, again, I must emphasize it was strictly a topical conversation and nothing of any nature was discussed. All I told him was, hold on, we're going for a ride.
All right. And were you and he the only two on that airplane?
Yes.
It's
we're the only two that would fit on that aircraft.
Right. I just want to clarify that for the audience, that it was a two-seater airplane. And you and George Bush were the two people on it.
That is correct.
Can you suggest to me, Captain, any other independent way to verify that this did occur?
Really, I don't know how we would verify it, other than the fact that Gary Sick has some information and some data. I think that he has dragged out of the annals of history, and possibly Le Bourget would have some of the information still in their logbooks.
Would there be any documented information, since it was a government aircraft, to show that plane flew, that you flew it back?
Well, I'm sure there's documented information. However, I don't really know how to tell you how to get it.
Yeah.
The problem you're involved in this type of case would be a national security matter, because the aircraft was requisitioned from another country, flew to France, and then from France to the United States.
So it's going to take some digging, obviously, and then that will, of course, unfold as this whole story goes along.
I wish you luck, Mr. Siegel.
Well, I thank you for that. Tell me something, Captain. you're in prison now. You're in federal prison. Why are you there?
I'm here for misappropriation of government property, misuse of government fuel, misuse of government purchase orders.
Was that as a result of this series of events in 1980?
No, it isn't. It deals with another operation altogether, differently.
And what you did in that operation, did you do it at the request or at the order of anyone in government?
Yes.
Who and what agency or what branch of government?
That was in liaison with the Federal Bureau of Investigation as well as with the Central Intelligence Agency, and I'm the one that bit the bullet.
So, in effect, they ordered you to do it. And you were you on the government payroll at the time?
Yes.
And they then turned the tables on you and vacated you. Is that what happened?
Basically, to a degree. I made a very horrendous mistake. I took my wife, my mother-in-law, on a flight that was on a government airplane, and they were the only civilian passengers ever on it, and they took very unkindly to it.
I see. So, and how long have you been behind? Well, first of all, when were you convicted?
I was convicted in February.
And how long you've been behind bars since?
I've been in custody a total of 11 months.
Do you anticipate when you might be getting out of prison?
Well, my maximum release date or termination of sentence would be December 23rd, 1991. However, there is an appeal in progress in hopes to overturn the conviction in its entirety.
Now, are you familiar with the Brenneke trial?
Yes, I am.
My understanding of that trial is that Mr. Brenneke was vindicated, that he told the truth, and Mr. Gregg was shown to have misled the jury in that case. Is that your understanding?
Well, my understanding is that Mr. Gregg was very cautious in his comments, and possibly he did not come across as well as he might have had he been in a different forum.
Mr. Martin, I think you did some research, and the jury found, or the court found anyway, in the defense of that case, that when Mr. Gregg, this is Donald Gregg, Mr. Bush's advisor, showed some pictures of he and his wife at some location where the sun was shining and they were at a beach of some sort.
In Maryland.
What they found was that the weather for that day in that area was inconsistent with what those pictures showed. Is that right?
In other words, Mr. Brenneke stated that he had been on the flight to Paris, that he had actually flown the president over there, and he was tried for perjury. And he was involved, I believe, in the trial of Heinrich Rupp, who was also involved in the process. And mind you, Mr. Rupp and Mr. Rossbacher and Mr. Brenneke have mutual associations in their background and history. But basically, when he testified that the flight had been taken and Mr. Gregg was indeed aboard the aircraft, Mr. Gregg presented a photograph of he and his wife showing that he was on a beach in Maryland and could not possibly have been in Paris at that time, and weather experts came in and testified that the cloud patterns and the whole background doesn't match what would appear at that beach nor on that day.
So that led to what has become pretty well known as Mr. Gregg's lack of credibility at that trial, for want of a better phrase.
Now, mind you, Mr. Brenneke was on trial for perjury for stating that he, in fact, flew that trip, and the federal jury found him innocent. Now, he's in Lake Oswego, Oregon, so he's right in your backyard also.
Yeah, we're in the process of attempting to get a hold of him.
And then, but you will find that no one has ever been able to account for William Casey's time. Mr. Bush has not accounted for his time. Now, there have been statements that he was here or there, but you have to understand, if you look at the Secret Service records, they have him in different places all at the same time. So there's a lot of inconsistency in the Secret Service records as well.
Well, did you see Mr. Krovitz's piece in the Wall Street Journal?
No, not yet.
Because it was last week, and I had him on the program.
I haven't read it. I just...
He makes the point that, according to the logs, Mr. Bush was campaigning during that period. And he was with Justice Potter Stewart on Sunday afternoon, but of course, or on the afternoon of October 19th, I should say.
I think the interpretation of campaigning can be taken rather loosely at this point.
Well, that's probably true. Captain, one other point before we get to some calls. Are you absolutely convinced that the dates in your mind are correct? October 19th, you flew him over, and in the early morning hours of October 20th, you flew him back?
Yes, I am.
There's no doubt in your mind about that?
Well, no doubt whatsoever, with the exception of the fact that I don't have my records in front of me.
Okay. Can I
somehow conveniently my records, as I was transferred from the Federal Detention Center in Pleasanton to the facility at Terminal Island, everything was lost. All my property has been lost.
Where were those? Where was that property that you last knew of? In other words, where?
I can barely hear you, sir.
Captain, where was that property that you say is lost the last time you saw it?
It was on the receiving and discharge table known as R&D at FDC Pleasanton. Also, I might add that when the Federal Bureau of Investigation raided my home, the two FBI agents, they confiscated two government memorandum booklets and tore all the data out of it. When they finally returned the booklets to my wife, they were blank.
Now, you had some of the material with you, though, so why would you have kept it in prison?
Well, sir, the only thing that I had was my own private log, which was basically encrypted, you know?
Yeah. All right, let me do this. Would you mind taking a call from a listener?
I have no objection, sir.
All right, let's go to Dave on a car phone. Hello, Dave. You're on King News Talk 1090.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Captain, I'm fascinated by the use of the SR-71 as a passenger airplane, and if you bear with me for a second, I understand there's special suits that are required, and that aircraft is intended to be operated by two specialists. Could you tell us a little bit about how the CIA goes about using that airplane as a passenger airplane?
Well, I can tell you that the fact is that, yes, the suits are of a different nature than a normal flight suit as used by the Air Force or the Navy. They are far more durable, they're thicker, and they are a combination of flight and space type suit. As far as the SR-71 being able to be flown by one crew member, if I may call your attention to it, when the 71 first came out of the Skunk Works, it was a single-seater.
All right, Dave?
Yes, thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. We'll go to George in Bellevue. You're on King News Talk 1090.
Yes, hi.
Go ahead.
Hey, I really want to commend you for stepping forward and saying all this. Being in prison, it must be pretty hard to stand up like this. It seems like they've already kind of got you between a rock and a hard spot.
That's the understatement of the year, sir.
Yeah. What would you say to us do you think there's any way for this to be resolved, to really be the truth to be told, or is this just another thing that 50 years from now will still be a question mark in history?
Sir, the only way that I can give you any type of definitive statement is to say that if the media pursues this issue, digs it up,
right,
presents it to the public, I guess it'll be up to the public to decide as to who's telling the truth and who is fabricating.
Well,
I hope to God that something can be done, that the truth comes forward.
Right. Well, let's be thankful for people like Mike Siegel then.
George, we thank you.
I am thankful.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Marjorie in Bellevue. You're on King News Talk 1090.
Phil Donahue had a discussion on his program today, and he had very credible people, Gary Sick, Christopher Hitchens, and two of the hostages. And also Bonnie Sauter from Paris. And if anybody cannot believe that this happened, they would have to believe in the Tooth Fairy. And I must say that Donald Gregg, I think his first name is Donald.
Yes.
He is, according to the information on the program, and by the words of Jimmy Carter, he was in the Carter administration, I believe, before he went over to be part of the Bush organization.
He was appointed George Bush to the CIA originally when Bush was the head of the director. He was there at the time, and he stayed in under the Carter administration.
Yeah. Well, he evidently was the gentleman who spilled the beans about the second attempt to release the hostages when he was with the Carter administration.
Well, he was supposed to have been, and Marjorie, and the point I think you're making is that Mr. Gregg wound up being the mole inside the Carter administration, in effect, for the Reagan-Bush campaign. Mr. Martin, is that your understanding?
Yes, and Carter was warned to purge the CIA of Bush and Nixon people, and he left two in there, and of course Gregg was one of them, and Carter has fingered Gregg as the mole.
On that note, we'll take a short break and come back. Captain, everything all right there?
Everything's fine, sir.
Okay, we'll come right back with Captain Russbacker and also with Mr. Martin at 647, the all-day trap. 652, right back to Captain Russbacker and to Mr. Martin. Let's go to Mark in the U District. You're on King News Talk 1090. Mark, go right ahead.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me on. I'd just like to ask Captain Russbacker about how, if there was a manifest or whatever, the departure report in France for the SR-71, and who would go about procuring that information?
Thank you for that question. Very good question, too. Captain?
Okay, my response to that question would be that it left from a military installation. If, in fact, a manifest still exists, which I'm sure it should somewhere in the annals of French bureaucracy, it should be obtainable if the French declassify it and give it to you.
So it should be available, you're saying, if people want to dig it up.
There's also a French memo from the intelligence service in France where they held a meeting about the fact that Bush was in France. Now, this has been on a radio show several years ago. The only problem is trying to locate that, and we're trying right now to find that particular memo to verify that point.
All right, and Mr. Martin, we're going to have you back on next week, hopefully, to go into this in more detail in terms of your research, all right?
Okay.
All right, let's go to Roger on Fox Island. You're on King News Talk 1090.
Hi, Captain Russbacker.
Hi.
I have a question. I've been listening to this. It's been very intriguing, and in order to kind of give some credibility to what you're saying, can you tell me the type of fuel that the SR-71 uses?
K-7.
K-7, all right.
K-7.
Was that A-7?
J as in J.
Okay.
James,
all right, J-7. Captain, we're short on time here. My final question in this segment, why did you decide to come forward and put yourself, obviously, at great risk?
Okay, I will try to answer this question in four lines. Number one, my friend, colleague, and associate, Richard came forward, Richard Brennecke, also known as Lucky. Heinrich Rupp has come forward. Gary Sick has come forward. A number of other people have come forward, including Bonnie Sutter, even though he is pushing a book. I have no intent of book or movie. I just want the truth out. I want the facts seen for what they are. I'm in prison today for misuse of a government aircraft, for misuse of government purchase vouchers, and for use of fuel. I think there are a lot of people running around doing the same blasted thing that I am, and yet they're not in this position.
Do you think it's because you went public?
Well, Mike, can I interrupt? Actually, Gunther didn't go public intentionally at first. He had a private conversation, which was taped by a friend of his, and I happened to have learned about the tape from somebody else and called and convinced the man to get the tape up to me. We ran the story, and then Gunther found out about it, and he had no other choice also to go public.
Captain, is that true?
That is basically true. It was either calling my friend a liar or going ahead with it, and I don't...
Well, he couldn't call his friend a liar. We had the tape.
Well, you see, what I'm saying is, yeah, I don't want to discredit friends of mine. I've never done this. I never will do this. All I want is that this country returns to what it priorly was before all this nonsense started. The involvement that we're talking about and referencing on this program goes far, far beyond 1980. 1980 was only the turning point for what really came. Gentlemen, although you're interested in the 1980 fiasco, bear in mind that everything that transpired from 1980 through 1991 was geared and orchestrated from 1981 on.
Captain, that's a well-said statement. It's a good place to close. Let me thank you, and I'm going to see if we can work out having you back on again. Obviously, there's much more to talk about. If you're willing to do that, I'd like to plan that sometime in the near future.
I enjoy talking with you, Mr. Siegel. Thank you for having me on.
My pleasure. Mr. Martin, we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, thanks.
We'll hear this and come back at King News Talk 1090.
tunnel to about Coal Creek, and then again from Park through the S-curves. And northbound 5 right now coming into town doesn't look too terribly bad. The King 1090 weather forecast is calling for low clouds tonight with lows near 45. Tomorrow we'll see some low clouds in the morning for the opening day of boat season, but we should have some clear skies by noon, highs near 66. That's traffic and weather together. I'm Pamela Thomas.
Seattle Lighting, your bright idea store.
One of Seattle Lighting's most popular events, their annual pre-Mother's Day floor and table lamp sale, is now in progress. And this year, with the additional showrooms in Redmond and North Seattle, the selection and styles of lamps are bigger and better than ever. Torchiere lamps, swing arm wall lamps, crystal lamps, table lamps, every type and every style for any room, and all on sale at up to 50% off. Like colorful ceramic designs by Markel, individually handcrafted Tiffany reproductions by Dale Tiffany, exquisite designs by the world leader in lamp craftsmanship, Stifel, all up to 50% off. It's the annual pre-Mother's Day floor and table lamp sale going on now at all Seattle Lighting showrooms.
Seattle Lighting, your bright idea store.
On the mantel over the fireplace is an intricate and fragile anniversary clock. For 15 years, it has measured the days of a marriage. On a bedroom dresser is a silver-framed photograph, a little blurred, of a promising young man looking earnest in his country's uniform. In a buffet wrapped in soft flannel, there's all that's left of Grandma's silver and memories of childhood Thanksgivings. But in 20 minutes, the clock will be smashed on the floor, the picture ripped from its frame, the silver stolen. And when a burglar in your home takes away memories, he leaves another memory behind that may never go away. So when you consider home security, you should know there is no better protection than a Home Guard security system. It is monitored 24 hours a day to protect your home and every treasure it holds. Home Guard, an affiliate of Washington Natural Gas. We can't stop crime from happening, but we can help stop it from happening to you. Not necessary to be a gas company customer.
I started driving truck for Derrygold right after they started business. I've seen a few changes since then. The traffic jams I ran into were cows changing pastures. But you know, there's been some improvements, like indoor plumbing. Now, that's a blessing. And so are the bathing suits they wear today. But I'm glad to see there's one thing that hasn't changed, Derrygold cheese.
Derrygold cheese is still made with the finest ingredients fresh from Derrygold dairies right here in the Northwest. There's Jack, Swiss, mozzarella, and four kinds of cheddar. All natural, all delicious.
I may be out to pasture myself these days, but when I want to remember how things were, I just take a bite of Derrygold cheese.
Derrygold, a delicious way to live.
From tangy cheddar to spicy jalapeno Jack, Derrygold cheese is the pride of Washington. To taste the pride inside, just look for the pride mark on the label of Derrygold cheese. It's your guarantee of getting the best cheese made in Washington.
Mother's Day is Sunday, May 12th, and King News Talk 1090, along with Canada Dry, would like to help you throw your mama on the plane. Look for Throw Mama on the Plane bottle hangers at Olson's grocery stores, fill it out, and mail it back. Your mom could win a weekend getaway in Victoria via the Victoria Clipper with one night at the Holland House. Or the grand prize, a trip for two to Montreal from Air Canada with two nights at the Sheraton and a gift certificate to Olson's. The first 50 entries receive Borghese gift packs from South Center Nordstrom's. Entries must be received by Thursday. Winners will be drawn Friday, May 10th. So throw Mama on the plane this coming Mother's Day, only from King News Talk 1090. .551 it is. Back we are with Hank Hanegraaff, president of the Christian Research Institute, on this whole question of cults. We're glad to have you with us as we go to Ben in Alki. You're on King News Talk 1090.
Hi there.
Yes, sir.
Jesus, beautiful down here.
I'm sure it is. Alki is a great spot.
Yeah. I just have a question. What makes Christianity different from cults?
All right. Well, he sort of went through that, but he'll do it
again.
Well,
yeah, that's a good question. Ultimately, a cult is different from Christianity, as, by the way, as is the occult, in that they deny the essential tenets of the historic Christian faith. For example, a cult will compromise the nature of God in one way or another. They will also compromise the deity of Jesus Christ, and all cults are man's attempt to try to become acceptable to God through their own goodness by living a good life, obeying the Ten Commandments. It's always man's attempt to reach up and become acceptable to God. Christianity says you can never be acceptable to God through yourself. The only way that you can be acceptable to God is through the provision he made, and the provision is Jesus Christ, who demonstrated that he was God through the immutable fact of the resurrection. And by the way, Jesus Christ does not stand in a line of peers with Baha'i or Buddha or Laozi or Confucius. He demonstrated that he was God because he said that he would die. He laid down his life and he took it up again, and that's historic and evidential.
All right, we go to Craig at a payphone. You're on King News Talk 1090.
Howdy.
Hi.
Let's see. I understand that Hank's a Trinitarian, and I'm a monotheist, and I'm a Christian monotheist. I base my beliefs on the words of Jesus Christ, where he said his Father was the only true God, on the words of Peter, where Peter said that Jesus Christ was a man approved of by God, and the words of Paul, where he said, to us, we only have one God, the Father, and one Lord, Jesus Christ. Now, you being a Trinitarian and me being a monotheist, would you accept me as a Christian brother?
Well, first of all, that's a compromise of the deity of the Lord Jesus Christ. We believe that Jesus Christ was God. We also are monotheistic. We believe in one God revealed in three persons, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Although the Bible does not use the word Trinity, it definitely teaches the concept of the Trinity. And the deviation of a cult is that they will teach that Jesus Christ may be a God, but he isn't God. We believe that Jesus Christ was God incarnate, second person of the Trinity.
All right, so then you would have something in common with the caller.
No, we would in the sense that we're monotheistic.
Right.
We wouldn't in the sense that he would deny the. It sounds like he would deny the Trinity from what a few comments he made, and I would affirm the Trinity not because I'm smarter than he is, simply because that's what the Bible teaches, and I can demonstrate that the Bible is the Word of God because it was written over 1,600 years by 40 different authors in three languages on three continents and on hundreds of different subjects with one central storyline: God's redemption of mankind.
Okay, we go to George and Kirkland, you're on King News Talk 1090.
Yeah, hi, Mike.
Hi.
Yeah, I would suggest that if the Sears catalog gets published long enough, that'd be the Word of God, too.
All right.
You know.
Boy, that was profound.
Well, you know, if you look in your Bible, you know, I would suggest you look up Judges 11. That's a justification for child sacrifice. I would suggest that you look through a good portion of the Old Testament, where, in fact, in Exodus, where supposedly God tells Moses, after they've come back from a battle, that they should go back and finish it off by taking the women and children for slaves and killing off all the young males.
Yeah, let me get in
here. Let me finish.
Okay.
There's a great deal of absolutely horrible genocidal and other types of violence in the Bible, supposedly commanded by God, and I think it's an absolutely disgusting, reprehensible manual for spiritual growth.
All right, let me have him respond. George, I thank you for calling, too.
Yeah, well, the first thing I'd say to George is this. He's probably never read the Bible. If you read Deuteronomy, one of the major tenets of the Christian faith is against child sacrifices. In fact, the Bible says, when you enter the land the Lord your God is giving you, do not learn to imitate the detestable ways of the nations there. Let no one be found among you who sacrifices his son or daughter in the fire. So this is ridiculous. This is another case of someone reading something someone wrote about the Bible rather than reading the Bible itself. The Bible, in fact, is, even someone who is has a cursory understanding of the Scripture understands that the Ten Commandments and the Ten Commandments militate against what this gentleman has brought up.
All right, now one thing I've got to ask you to do, I know you're short on time, but we've got some members of Scientology who, in fairness, I would like to get on the air. We'll even go into our top story segment if you can stay for a few minutes after.
I'll try to do it.
I appreciate that very much, and we'll let those certainly want to get that point of view heard, give them an opportunity. 5:56 at King News Talk 1090. Listen to King News Talk 1090 for the best opening day of the boating season coverage in Seattle tomorrow morning starting at 10 a.m. with Bob Hardwick and Tony Miner, only on King News Talk 1090.
It's the World Series, but the action's faster. It's the Rose Bowl, but it isn't in California. It's the heavyweight championship, but the athletes are bigger than George Foreman and faster than lightning. It's the Kentucky Derby, Saturday, May 4th, and you can see it live right here at Longacres Park. Watch and wager like you were right there. See which name gets added to that famous roster of Derby champions. Will it be Best Pal with writer Gary Stevens? Or Hansel, still sizzling from a Lexington Stakes record? Or maybe Fly So Free or Strike the Gold? Or will the unexpected happen again? You just have to be there. Gates open at 11:30. First race at 1. Catch the Pony Express at Long Acres Park this Saturday, because we'll be delivering all the thrills of the Kentucky Derby.
My mother-in-law has this image of me as being just an old-fashioned girl. Well, you know, the kind of girl that keeps a clean house. So I hired a maid service. The kind that takes care of the garden. So I hired a gardener. The kind that can sew up a storm. So I buy off the rack and rip out the labels. And the kind of girl that can cook like there's no tomorrow. Which is why I do all my grocery shopping at QFC. There I can pick up fresh produce, meat, and seafood. All the ingredients I need for a fabulous meal. But the best part is, at QFC they're always a great help when it comes to preparation and serving suggestions. So when my mother-in-law comes for dinner tonight, everything will be perfect. This cooking stuff is easy once you know the secret.
At QFC, you have our guarantee that our produce is the freshest available. You'll also find a great selection of seafood and quality U.S. choice beef in our meat department. Quality food centers. We're just what you're in the market for.
Besides, how tough can it be? I'll get out the pots, the pans, and fill them with the food I got from QFC's deli department.
Remember Shirazi Rugs, the rug dealer offering those fantastic going-out-of-business prices on all of their fine handmade Persian, Indian, Tibetan, Chinese, Pakistani, and Turkish rugs? Well, Shirazi had such a large inventory of these fine investment-quality rugs that there are still hundreds left, and time is running out. So now is your chance to name your own price. The remaining inventory will be auctioned at this no-reserve, no-minimum event. Shirazi will auction their remaining handmade rugs at 6 p.m., preview 10 a.m., Saturday, May 4th, and again at 3 p.m., preview noon, Sunday, May 5th. Special early bird previews from 10 a.m. till 8 p.m. Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. Don't miss this once-in-a-lifetime event. The auction will be held at the Shirazi Showroom, 801 First Avenue on the corner of 1st and Columbia, downtown Seattle. Shirazi Rugs Going Out of Business Auction. Name your own price on these beautiful handmade works of art. Shirazi Rugs Going Out of Business Auction, Saturday, May 4th at 6 p.m., Sunday, May 5th at 3 p.m. Shirazi Rugs, 292-9200, 292-9200. Auction conducted by Satori's Fine Art Auctioneers of Seattle, Washington.
We're going to come back after all the latest news from ABC and King News Talk 1090's Lisa Brooks. We'll continue with just a few minutes with Hank Hanegraaff of the Christian Research Institute. We'll have those callers from the Scientology Church to respond to him at King News Talk 1090.
Eastside commuters, if you're going eastbound across Lake Washington, take I-90. It's starting to clear out. Eastbound 520 still backed up to I-5, and westbound still backed up to 405.
In touch, in depth, involved. King News Talk 1090. K-I-N-G, Seattle.
It's 6 o'clock.
Now this ABC News brief. Hard-pressed relief organizations are struggling to deal with the latest world disaster, the intense cyclone that hit Bangladesh last Tuesday. John.